the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, brought to you by Kraken. And for my second episode this month, dedicated to the Lightning Network, I've got an interview with Jack Mallers, founder of the Zap Wallet, discussing design and UX. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So, Kraken. For the last few shows, I've been talking about their recent news regarding their dedication to security. And this week, I got on the phone and caught up with Nick Pococo, their chief security officer. And we've been discussing a few ideas and ways we can help traders and investors with security. So we've talked about a couple of things, a couple of ideas we're working on. So firstly, I'm going to put together a week of shows focused on security, similar to my other recent specials, looking at both security for exchanges, but also personal security. And I'm definitely going to get Nick on to discuss that and how they handle things at Kraken, and also where things can go wrong and how we all can improve our personal security. So hopefully that will be a really helpful few shows for listeners of the podcast. And secondly, I'm also going to work with Kraken on developing some tutorials which can go on my website, which will teach people how they can improve their personal security related to crypto. So hopefully a bunch of useful things there. Keep an eye out for that. Gonna hopefully try and get that live by around June. So it's gonna take a couple of months, but bear with me. And if you haven't heard these previous ads where I've been talking about the Kraken Security Labs, which is their dedication to improving security across the entire crypto ecosystem, then I recommend you go and read about this on their blog. It's really interesting stuff. Anyway, I couldn't be happier to be working with Kraken. They are the number one exchange in the world for me. Everything they do is absolutely amazing. So if you want to join me in supporting Kraken, head over to kraken.com, which is KRAKEN.com. And also, I've been talking about BlockFi for the last few shows in relation to their announcement for their interest accounts, and there has been all these questions about it. So I'm going to be getting on the phone with Zach later today. I'm going to be asking them a whole bunch of questions that you've been sending to me. So firstly, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone who wrote to me. I think I had about 15 emails with a whole range of questions for Zach, which pretty much cover everything. And also just thank you to Zach for giving up the time to do this. So we're going to record that today, and I'm going to get that out on SoundCloud over the weekend. And it's especially timely as BlockFi just announced their first interest payouts, which has certainly spiked interest. I've had a few people reach out to me and talk about this. It's, you know, I've got to be honest, it spiked my interest. I've said I was going to put some Bitcoin in there. I think I'm going to do it. They generated a total of 23.2 Bitcoin and 405.3 ETH of interest for BlockFi clients, and it's not something I can ignore. So whatever your view on this, it's certainly interesting. If you want to find out more about it, you can head over to the BlockFi website, which is BlockFi.com. Okay, so onto my interview with Jack. And listening back, I'm always a bit self-critical, and this interview highlighted many gaps in the knowledge that I have, and I'm kind of okay with this because it was my first Lightning interview, and I'd made a decision when I was going to do this month, I was going to try and come to this as fresh as possible, as cold as possible, almost learn on the job and just share my experience with you as the listeners. But definitely with this interview, it raised some gaps in my knowledge. So for example, I wasn't fully aware of the difference between Blue Wallet and Zap, in that Blue Wallet is custodial, and maybe you're thinking, well, Pete, you're an idiot, this is obvious, but it wasn't to me. I mean, I know what the difference between custodial and non-custodial is, I just didn't realize Blue Wallet is custodial, and perhaps that's something people think is an issue, because it kind of goes back to that exchange problem, not your keys, not your Bitcoin, and if you're using something like Blue Wallet, then it is custodial. And like Jack said, there may be no ill intent here, but maybe people need to be aware of what they're actually engaging with. So that was something that became a little bit more obvious to me. So the interview raised a couple of issues that I'm wrestling with. The first one, which I think some of you won't have a problem with, but essentially we're early, we're meant to be reckless, but at the same time, I've kind of struggled with a few things. So there's a few issues I've had with moving between Bitcoin and Lightning back to Bitcoin. You know, I had my issue with Blue Wallet, not knowing it was custodial. Am I risking coins without really knowing? Should I just accept this? We're a live beta and this is all about feedback. So it's kind of something I'm wrestling with, but getting my head around. But the bigger issue that I am wrestling right now is the economics of this. So Jack talked about how people will use Lightning and maybe never touch the base chain, that they will just top out their wallet and use it as necessary. Perhaps because of the ease of use, or perhaps because the Bitcoin base chain will price some people out of it in the future. People talk about keeping the block size limited for the security of the network so that we can have as many nodes as possible. But if we have a highly used Bitcoin base chain, does that mean in the future fees will go really high? And what does this mean? Do we therefore have a two-tier Bitcoin where the base chain is for those who are essentially Bitcoin rich, then Lightning Network is for everyone else? Is this fine? Does it matter whether you're on the base chain or Lightning? People talk about Lightning only being for small payments. What happens in the future when someone maybe has a couple of $1,000 of Bitcoin and say the base chain fees are $100? I mean, it's going to be possible, right? Does that mean they should have their couple of $1,000 on Lightning? Or are there some technology solutions in the future that means you can use the base chain, but you aren't exposed to the whole $100 fee for interacting with it because it's split? I don't know. I'm not an expert. I would love to speak to other people about this, but it's definitely something I'm wrestling with, this kind of two-tier Bitcoin. Anyway, definitely something I'm wrestling with. Please reach out to me if I've misunderstood something or I don't understand something. Please let me know. If it's complicated for me, I'm sure it's complicated for other people. I'm looking forward to doing a show actually about Bitcoin economics. I think I'm going to do that with Pierre Richard. So definitely something I'm wrestling with, but would always appreciate any feedback you have on that. And listen, if you enjoy the show and you want to support it, please check out my website. Head over to whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section. Loads of things you can do. And I also want to say a big thank you to my top tier patron, Rise Wallet, a new way into Bitcoin. There are no signups. Just scan your card and you're holding Bitcoin. Head over to risewallet.com to find out more. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the interview. If you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello at whatbitcoindid.com. Hi, Jack. How you doing, mate?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming on. I'm sorry we didn't do this in Chicago while I was there. That would have been cool.
Oh, it's all good, dude. Thank you for having me.
Chicago is a really cool place.
It is. It is. I'm glad to have been born there.
Yeah. So I was watching one of your presentations and you said the only intuitive interface is the nipple.
Yes. That's a design quote. So I guess what I mean by that is that everything else has to be learned, right? That's the takeaway there.
Yeah.
But it's true, right? Was the nipple intuitive to you?
Not on me. On my mother it was, but not
yeah,
my father.
Yeah, to you, not on you.
Yeah.
Sheesh, kinky start.
Yeah. I wasn't going to do an origin story, and then I started asking you about it, and then you come out with all this really cool stuff about your dad and your granddad. So can you tell me the story? Because it was really interesting.
Yeah, so I first learned about Bitcoin from my father in 2013, early 2013, which was right after I graduated high school. And so that's backwards always, right? Like I'm supposed to tell my dad about Bitcoin after I'd bought a bunch of drugs with his cash, turned to Bitcoin, turned to weed, but it was backwards. So the Malish family story is my grandfather was the youngest chairman in the Chicago Board of Trade, and he wrote the funding check that started the SIBO. And my dad founded what went on to be one of the more successful futures brokerages in Chicago. And we have deep, deep, family finance history in Chicago. Actually, my uncle, his company just got acquired by Bakkt, and he now leads compliance at Bakkt, which is cool. Now he's a Bitcoiner. But that's my introduction to Bitcoin, is that the Chicago finance scene has been deeply invested and ingrained into this asset because Chicago's finance history is all commodities. Chicago essentially invented derivatives on top of commodities. The CME and the SIBO are two of the biggest derivatives exchanges in the world. So a new asset class, in particular, a new commodity. I mean, how often do you get to be alive for something like that? So all these Chicago guys, the Cumberland, DRW, CME, SIBO, the Mallers family, they've been on Bitcoin for a very long time. A new commodity, new asset class with sound monetary characteristics, it screams Chicago. So that was my introduction, not Silk Road or anything. So it's definitely a weird one. But I have a cheat code, right? Like I'm very lucky to have a father like I do.
That's a really cool story though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, I'm about to do a Lightning month.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So this is the first interview for it, but it's not going to be the first release. This will come partway through. But in all my other interviews, I started asking this question to people, what is Bitcoin? Because I'm always fascinated by the answer and it's always different. It's really interesting, actually. But I think for this series, I'm going to ask it slightly different. So what is Lightning?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So a Lightning is an attempt to increase the transaction throughput of the asset, more generally speaking, right? That is the value proposition of the white paper. What it is technically is a layered protocol on top. It leverages the security of the base layer and introduces new peer relationships. So Bitcoin's base layer is global settlement, right? Like every activity is broadcasted to everyone on the network. Everyone has to validate it. Everyone has to append it to the blockchain. And in Lightning, you have these link-to-link relationships where if you and I make a Lightning payment, no one else on the Lightning network needs to know about that. So that scales infinitely better. And the relationship there mirrors more of what we would want out of general commerce activity or micropayments or whatever. But the ambitious goal was to make sure that we can get more throughput out of Bitcoin, the asset class, because there are some technical limits on the base layer.
Right. Okay. So to give a bit of context to my background and what we're talking about today, I wanted to talk about design and UX. Mm-hmm. So I used to have my own web development agency. I started out as a UX designer. So I'm ultra critical of everything. My favorite book is by a guy called Steve Krug called Don't Make Me Think. So I'm ultra critical of everything, and I've just started dipping my toes in with Lightning, and I've had a few struggles. So it's a subject I want to talk about with you. But would you say that with the Lightning Network, would you agree with me that the goal is to create fast, easy, and secure payments?
Yeah. Well, I'm always hesitant to cement goals on top of Bitcoin.
Okay.
Bitcoin means something different to everyone. I mean, speaking on the guys in Chicago in my origin story, they're guys that trade cash-settled derivatives because a new asset class that's largely Reddit morons trading this thing, that's a dream world for a professional trader, right? And those guys don't care. Bitcoin to them is a new revenue stream. And then Bitcoin to someone in Venezuela is something entirely different. So I'm always hesitant to cement goals for Lightning.
Okay.
Lightning's goal can mean something to me and someone in Chicago at the CME, totally different than you. But that's certainly, those characteristics are certainly what majority are trying to achieve, right? I would agree with that.
Yeah, I guess. And I saw you say that people can't use Lightning easily yet. Do you still stand by that?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess the metric I'm using in my brain right now is there are more people that can't use Lightning than there are people that can. And so I think by definition, to say that people can easily use Lightning, that would mean that the majority are comfortable onboarding themselves and benefiting from it. And I don't think that I can comfortably say that. We've made a lot of progress,
mm-hmm.
but I still think that there's much more work to do than there's work that has been done, for sure.
Yeah. So my experience so far is that I'm always thinking about, how do I onboard people? Like, if I want to onboard one of my friends or my dad onto Bitcoin, I'm quite comfortable with Bitcoin now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite happy with that. It's kind of like, get yourself a hardware wallet. I give them a couple of videos to watch, and then I'm like, just go onto an exchange, buy some, and move it into your hard wallet, and you'll learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
To layer on, excuse the pun, but to layer on Lightning now, I don't think I'm ready. I don't want my friends to even be thinking about it yet because of my own experience. So how do you feel at the moment that it's kind of being pushed out there to use? I know with warnings, but it's being pushed out there to use, which is fine. But when I saw, say, Jack Dorsey promoting it to potentially millions of people,
mm-hmm.
I was a bit like, whoa, I don't think we're ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
I wouldn't say we're ready either, but I wouldn't say Bitcoin's necessarily ready for what it's been marketed as, right?
Okay.
As like a world solution to some of the world's greatest problems.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is Bitcoin is, there's no company, there's no CEO, right? And a lot of this stuff is organic. What you saw in 2017 was a fierce marketing push of this thing that has serious potential and serious value as it stands today. And I mean, it traded at $20,000 for 10 seconds. Was that grossly overvalued compared to the current development and where the asset is as far as maturing in global economics? Yeah, of course it was. And we shot right back down. So yeah, that happens. A really powerful man in Jack Dorsey can tweet what he wants about it. That's a cool thing. And he did. And sure, Lightning has a lot of attention on it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but it's the nature of the industry. And you live in these type of hype cycles in Bitcoin. We're all familiar with them at this point.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're onboarding somebody,
mm-hmm.
So I just met your girlfriend. Was she into Bitcoin when you met her?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you're onboarding her into Bitcoin. How do you do it? What's your journey for onboarding someone?
So for my girlfriend and some of my family members, I give them a QR code that is to one of my nodes. And I just let them scan it with their Zap app, and they get to whatever, buy a y'all's article or make a micropayment on Satoshi's Place or something, and let them just live it.
Into Lightning?
Lightning. But, oh, Bitcoin, yeah, in general?
Yeah, Bitcoin in general.
I don't know. I think it largely varies. Like, I've got a bunch of hardware wallets that I share, and I'm down to experiment with people. I'll even help them set up a Coinbase account if they're that nascent to it. So it varies for sure. I mean, some of my more technical friends will set up a full node together. But I don't know. I guess it depends on the use case. It's not a very helpful answer.
You obviously just told me a process there for Lightning, because that was my next question.
Yeah.
And I was starting to think about it, because I've been thinking a lot about education. I start to feel like there's almost levels.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want somebody to go straight to Lightning. I think that would be quite a scary prospect to say, you know, say you have a wallet that has both Bitcoin and Lightning, because I think it's too big a step.
I almost disagree.
Oh, right. Okay. Come on then.
So
hit me with it.
Yeah, I got you. So I honestly envision a world where there will be Bitcoin users that never touch the base chain. I think
that I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, you can buy Bitcoin, get it delivered over Lightning, buy whatever you want over Lightning, and then just keep topping up by $10, buy $10 of Bitcoin, delivered over a channel instantly. So I don't think that the base chain is a requirement to use the asset. So I think, to be honest with you, Lightning introduces a whole new relationship with the end user, right? I think some of the characteristics of Bitcoin in the base layer and what it's been the last 10 years, it's really tough to develop a relationship to the general retail investor. And I think Lightning and some of the characteristics it brings, that relationship is going to be much more powerful in the next 10 years. And so some people, I think introduction to Lightning first is great. Look at this thing. Look at this asset. It can cross borders. It can pay fractions of a cent. It's much cheaper than Visa. The throughput is infinite. I mean, I guess there's certainly technical limits, but we don't have to get into that. And so I think that's a fair introduction to Bitcoin.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm not sure I totally agree with that. You have to sync a full node or write down a seed of a hardware wallet or something to then make a micropayment. I don't know.
So it sounds to me like you're thinking years ahead, though.
Potentially.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, all this stuff is early. As someone who's building a product on top of this stuff, you also have to understand that no one is going to geniusly like stay up late at night and sketch the next beautiful Lightning interface that's going to take over the world. Every good product is trial and error. You put something out into the world, you see who pokes, you see who touches, and you learn. What's the quote of, if you're talking, you can't be learning, right? As a product mm-hmm. person, you have to be observing, you have to be a good listener, you have to be patient. And so the pace of Lightning as it relates to the consumer is not on my time, it's on their time. And I'm just here to listen and to tinker and to be very observant into how people, what their relationship is with the asset, how they use it, how they want to use it, how they see it now, how they envision it in the future. And then but that's on their time. That Bitcoin is on the world's time. The world isn't on Bitcoin's time, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense? So
yeah, no, it does. And but it's quite interesting because I obviously want to talk to you about designing UX.
Yeah.
Your website says making Bitcoin usable, right?
Yeah.
Have I quoted that exactly right?
Making Bitcoin usable for everyone.
For everyone, yeah, that's right. Okay, so let's talk about designing UX.
Sure.
How do you feel generally about designing UX across Bitcoin generally?
Yeah, so I would like to introduce my introduction to design and UX. So I come from Chicago, and Jason Fried, who is the CEO of Basecamp, and he's a very polarizing figure in design and UX and just company structure in general. He thinks venture capital is really bad. He thinks having a company size bigger than 50 makes no sense. He's very lean. He thinks taking in any form of debt on day one, if your product is supposed to be making money, you should sell it. No advertising business. And he's very polarizing in that sense. But his opinions on design and UX are very organic. He's some of the best in the tech space on it. And he's been my mentor since I was like 17 years old.
Basecamp, is that? They also do Campfire and...
Yep.
Yeah. I know those.
Yeah. So yeah, Jason. So I went to college for like 2 months, dropped out, and I went into like a coding boot camp that he was kind of a funder, I guess, or a mentor of. And we built a relationship that lasts today. So all of my design principles and how I think about product all come from Jason. And so I think in Bitcoin, design and product thinkers, there aren't a lot of them, and design is severely undervalued, which is okay. I think that that's not by mistake. I think that largely design wasn't needed in the first decade of Bitcoin, right? It is mm-hmm. largely technical problems, and the fact that it's a commodity and it needed to foster some form of market and exchanges and derivative products was a much more important problem than establishing design principles that reach the next billion users. But we're almost at that point. And I think design, it will become much more prevalent as stuff like Lightning begins to mature. But all of my product thinking and stuff, I cannot credit myself. That is all people like Jason and the folks in Chicago that basically raised me, right? I didn't go to college. So that's where that comes from.
Well, that's pretty cool. I know their products from when I had my company.
Yeah.
Is it a to-do list?
Yeah. It was formerly 37 Signals.
Yeah, yeah. And they wrote a book, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I remember.
Plenty of them. DHH is the co-founder,
yeah.
And he's fairly polarizing then on the tech side. But yeah, it was formerly 37 Signals. And to Jason's credit, like his traditional store, he thought it was far too complex for them to have so many products. He thought Basecamp was majority of their business. Basecamp was majority of their users. Basecamp was what they were good at. So he basically gave everything else away.
Wow.
So there are people I know that run those other products now, which are great businesses. But simplicity, being good at one thing, being focused, being lean, being patient, these are all things that he prides himself on and is successful at doing. So that was how it now is Basecamp. But you're right, it was 37 Signals.
So are they less than 50 people then?
Yes, to my knowledge. Last time I checked in, they were about 40. But I mean, the profit, the numbers that they do, that's very impressive. I know like their iOS app, for example, is one of the top on the App Store, and the iOS team is 3.
Well, if they keep growing though, they're going to have some form of pruning.
Maybe, right?
Yeah.
But it's unclear. Like, I know a bulk of their staff is customer support. Like, Jason takes the relationship with the end user very seriously. These are the type of things that I really appreciate. But as far as engineering goes, his point, one of the things he prides himself on is no one should have to work more than 40 hours a week. If you work more than 40 hours a week, you're a maniac. And realistically, you should probably work like 20. Because the hard part is not actually working. If you're an engineer or a designer or a podcaster, the hard part isn't like doing the thing that you're a professional at. It's figuring out what to do and optimizing your time. If I understand what features to build, what to be designing, what to be learning from Lightning users, well, then actually doing that, it is not, that's not the hard part. But I mean, what people tend to do is stuff their schedules with meetings. They tend to overwork. They do an array of things because they don't really understand what should be done at the time. So he prides himself on that. And if you're good at understanding what to do, then the amount of staff that you need to actually do it is very minimal. And they don't even have an enforced office. Everyone works remotely. You kind of just casually do work throughout the week, but it's great work because you know what you're doing, right? And, and you're very good at what you're doing. And so
do you know how many hours you do a week then?
Oh man. Well, I don't think I can count because a lot of this I don't consider work.
Yeah, well, that's the point. Like, so I don't, what we're doing right now isn't work. I consider work the stuff that I'm doing where I would rather be doing something else. So right now, I wouldn't rather be, well, apart from being with my kids and being in office, I really enjoy doing this. But when I've got to upload something to my website, that's work.
Yeah.
So I think I do about 60 to 70 hours a week, but I only think about 30 to 40 hours of that is work.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I probably spend 100% of my time thinking about Bitcoin. and seriously, I mean, that's being dramatic, maybe by like 5%. So like maybe 95%. But that's not work to me. That's not my preferred lifestyle, to be quite honest with you. So I don't know. You can probably do a count on how many hours I'm working on Zap in particular. I do a lot of other interesting things in the exchange space. I've been a trader my whole life through my dad. So, but I mean, it all Bitcoin centric. So I don't think that it's fair to count my work hours because it's my preferred lifestyle.
Do you have any of your own personal design and UX principles?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think the best designers copy though. Good designers create, great designers copy. There's no reason to be reinventing principles. Design is all about creating an experience for people to gain value. So the relationship they have with a screen or the relationship they have with a menu at a restaurant, I mean, these are all experiences where people are looking to accomplish a thing and you have to help them do that. And so if there are prior ways to have how people are traditionally adept to accomplishing things, then just use them. So for me, I largely copy a bunch of people. I think I pride myself on intuition, seeing myself forward. A lot of the reasons I think I like chess, and just being an observer. I'm a very observant person, but I don't consider myself necessarily like a dominant creator. So I don't know. I don't think like I've necessarily invented design principles that I use.
Do you go on like Dribbble to get ideas?
Oh no, God, no. No, no way. No offense to the people on Dribbble. Everyone has their own mojo, but that's not mine. No.
So can you point your finger to things within the Bitcoin and crypto world that you think where there is design that you like? I'll throw out one to begin with.
Sure.
By the way, and I don't use Coinbase anymore, but I think their design and UX is brilliant. Every time I ever used it, I thought this is just so easy.
Yeah.
I think they've nailed it. And I think there are a few others. Do you have any that you point to?
Yeah, well, I think, well, in Coinbase's sense, there's a design is a really broad term. So to say that they have great design, it's kind of like Bitcoin has great decentralization. It's like, yeah, whatever the fuck that means. I don't know. But in Coinbase's part, what they've done is they've done very good polarized marketing, right? So Bitcoin to people, it's complex, it's computer science, it's math, it's speculative, it's dangerous, it's drugs. And they've taken that relationship that people have with it and they've created a direct polar opposite. And even if people don't directly relate to Coinbase, it's very clear to identify Coinbase, right? Because it's the direct, it's black and white to people. And so they go, well, if I'm not that, I must be this, right? If I'm not the drug lord, but I want to get into this thing, I must be Coinbase. Mm-hmm. And they've created that relationship with the industry. And that is what they've been largely successful at. If you go to, as a designer, you digest their UI and some of the things, design principles that they've deployed, I don't necessarily think it's great in comparison to design maybe that Jason does with Basecamp. But their overall branding and marketing and how they have contrasted themselves in the industry is top-notch for sure. And I think there's a lot of companies like that. I think Blockstream is branded really well. Bitcoin Core is branded really well. Not to say that the Bitcoin Core contributors themselves are to credit that. I think the community brands Bitcoin Core very well. Mm-hmm. So I think branding in Bitcoin has been very powerful and largely successful with some folks. But actual design, the user interface and the relationship people have with the tools they're using is still largely poor. Like even on Coinbase, I mean, there's I recently am the hashtag delete Coinbase. So I'm going to my old accounts and trying to click through. And I've got like, I click on my accounts to get to my wallets. Like, what do you mean my accounts? It makes no sense. I'm largely confused. I can't find Bitcoin because all these other shit coins are up there that I have no balance. It's like, why show me something that has no balance? So like, I don't know, design and actual relationship with products, I think is going to take a lot of work.
I guess it depends on the goal, right? Because the counter argument to that would be they're advertising to you other shit coins that they want you to go and buy.
Sure. But then, okay, fine. But then Coinbase isn't, it is an iterative design, right? So they aren't being, they aren't reacting to their user's experience and trying to craft a good one and help them, right? They are tactically trying to sell you something. So they're not now like a salesman and a broker and not what they market themselves as just like the Bitcoin company that's here to help, right? That's their marketing pitch, is like can do no wrong, the blue brand, like the Chase Bank and the Facebook, like we are the staple. So I agree with you, right? Like they are shitcoin salesmen and I think Coinbase struggles with the business model. Personally, I think that Brian Armstrong is an idiot and that he's not a businessman. But you're right. But in design terms, I mean, I'm there to accomplish a thing and they don't help me do that. And right. So in design terms, that's very binary. You've failed. So
is there a link between design and security?
Sure. I think there's a link between design and anything, design right. and whatever people are trying to accomplish.
But is there a conscious link between design and security? So when you're working on Zap and there's certain things you have to think about with security, are you having to think about the design in relation to that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things in Bitcoin about security, what's paramount is just education. It's just understanding how to secure yourself. I mean, what Bitcoin does is it flips the scale and where people are self-sovereign in their own right and secure in their own right. And it takes a sense of education for people to understand how to secure themselves. And that's a design challenge, is how do you bridge really complex protocol stuff, really complex computer science, mathematics, really complex security principles, and turn that into a digestible screen that people can understand and help themselves with. So yeah, I think that's a design problem for sure. Right.
Next up, I talked to Jack Moore about Lightning design and UX, but before that, I've got a message from my show sponsor, BlockFi. So I've talked about this for a couple of weeks now. I'm getting ready to speak with Zach later. I'm going to be getting on the phone, putting all the questions to him that you've been sending to me. So again, thank you to everyone who wrote to me. I've got some really great questions, which pretty much summarize all the things that people have been debating about their interest accounts. So I'm going to be on the phone with Zach later, and I'm going to get that up on SoundCloud over the weekend. And as I said, it's really timely. You know, BlockFi announced their first interest payouts, which certainly spiked interest. They generated a total of 23.2 Bitcoin and 405.3 ETH of interest for BlockFi clients, which is, you know, it's pretty amazing. It's tempting me. I've got to say I'm interested in this. I've thought about doing it before. I pretty much think I'm going to give it a go. I need to kind of put my money where my mouth is and trust my clients. So I'm going to give it a go. But
I also am interested in the answers that Zach's going to give to these questions. So I'm going to be getting on the phone with him later. Keep an eye out for that over the weekend. If you are interested in finding out more about these interest accounts, just head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Okay, so let's talk a bit more about Lightning, because like I said, I'm just starting to dip my toes in.
Yep.
And one of the things I'm a bit confused about is what I need to know about, you know, what do I need to be aware of? So, for example, I downloaded your wallet, mm-hmm. and the first thing it asked me to do was connect to a node.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh? Does that mean, do I need to have a, is that my Casa node? And so do you envisage a scenario? I'm trying to think a few years ahead, right? So I'm kind of happy if we're to say everything now is taking us to where we want to be. But do you envisage, say, a few years down the line, everyone should and will have a node? Or do you think you will just open up a wallet and instantly be able to use it?
Yeah. So the reason that that's the case with Zap is Zap has some very strict principles. I mean, when I wrote the blog post in, I think it was August of 2017.
The Medium post.
Yeah. It was Zap was for the community, by the community. It was going to stay strict to representing some of the core principles that make Bitcoin great today. And it wasn't going to compromise on those. And it was going to be a staple that represented hodlers and users of the like, and it wasn't going to get dissuaded by venture capital or by anything like that. So for Zap, the reason that we make you connect to a remote node now is because running a node on your cell phone, which is the goal, is not quite obtainable yet. So there's a light client called Neutrino, which is pioneered by Lightning Labs and Lalu in particular. And what that will allow you to do is download Zap from the App Store, and there will be a light client Lightning node running on your cell phone. And so all of a sudden, there's no need to connect to a remote node, and there's no need to trust anyone else. The node is actually on your piece of hardware. And then from there, you can, whatever, scan QR codes and what have you. And there's no barrier to entry or external resource. But for the time being, the only way to have that seamless experience is to have a custodian that, I mean, I don't like these custodial wallets. I think that they're great for education, and I'm glad people get to experience Lightning. But I think that it's largely gaslighting. Like, people are so excited about, I mean, Lightning is a fascinating breakthrough in technology, right? What it's able to accomplish piggybacking off Bitcoin is absolutely fascinating. And for people to take that concept and take the excitement that people have about that and gaslight them and go, oh, you want to participate in this revolutionary payment system, efficient settlement of this commodity asset? Well, give me all of your Bitcoin and ask me permission to spend your Bitcoin for you. It's like, well, what the fuck, man? So that is what Zap will not do forever. So right now, the only way to use Lightning on your iPhone in the true Bitcoin way, keeping principles strong and firm, is to connect to some other remote node that's fully validating, because you can't do it on your cell phone yet. But to your point, in a year or two, you will be able, even sooner maybe. I mean, I'm testing it right now internally. Today, I can show you where you download it and the node is on your phone. It's a light client, so it should sync mainnet in like 30 to 60 seconds, and then you're good for the rest of your life.
But do you even see a scenario where you download the wallet and the node is part of that?
Yeah, so you download the wallet and the node actually comes baked in, compiled into the application. Yeah.
Okay, and there'll be no setting up of a node?
No, it'll just be like, hey, here's your seed, like in case you lose your phone. Or even if you don't have, even if to you Lightning is $100 or so, and if you lose your phone, you lose $100, so be it. And then you get to just use it. I think it would be great if you can open your Lightning wallet, buy $100 worth of Bitcoin, it gets delivered to you over Lightning instantly, and you go scan a QR code and buy a beer and a blunt or whatever you're going to do.
So it's probably good at this point, because there will be people listening who don't understand, if you just explain the difference between a custodial and a non-custodial wallet.
Sure. So custodial wallet is where you're trusting someone else is custodying the asset for you. So basically you hand over your asset. They are in charge of securing it. They're in charge of using it, frankly. They can run a fractional reserve. They can go lend it out. And then when you want to spend it on their behalf, you have to ask them permission. So what that usually looks like is just a UI button that says send. But what you're actually doing is saying, hey, sir, of the owner of my coin, may you please, if you can, pay this request. And the dynamic there is totally against what got us here. I think custodial services will be around forever. I think that there will always be people that opt to them, and that's okay. But if we were okay with using custodial services, then we could have come up with a much simpler way to scale Bitcoin than Lightning. We could have used this really dope thing called a database, and it's sick. Coinbase pioneered it in the Bitcoin industry, and we could have done that. But implementing a protocol that keeps the same principles that make Bitcoin amazing, that make it self-sovereign and make it important, it's paramount, right?
So, okay. So it was Blue Wallet custodial?
Yes.
Right. So that's kind of interesting because me as someone who's not technical and always as happy to look at things with my kind of dumb eyes on,
right,
I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference between Zap and Blue Wallet as somebody who just first time downloaded them, two of them. What that says to me is two things. Is firstly, I think people should be given a strong warning if something's a custodial wallet.
Yep.
But also at the same time, should there be a bigger debate around this?
So that's the only issue I have. With the Blue Wallet, I was in a Twitter thread with the guy saying my opinions, and he seemed to have been offended or something. And here, listen, like at the end of the day, it's so early and everyone's trying to help. I don't think anyone's being malicious. Maybe, honestly, maybe Bitfury in their wallet. But I don't think Blue Wallet's being malicious. I think they're doing great and fine, and they are largely helping people experience this stuff. But I do think that there's an aspect of gaslighting. Like, hey, you want to experience Lightning? Well, download this. That's not experiencing Lightning. I can deliver the same experience to you before Satoshi wrote the white paper. Like, Chase, wire me $1,000 and I'll do database transactions on your behalf. That's Venmo. That's not interesting. But you're pitching it as something that's revolutionary, and it's not. And that, I think there should be disclaimers. There should be some more form of education, in my opinion. I think also, as it relates to Lightning, there are some serious features that you lack by being a... So the cool thing about Lightning is that every single node is actually an online identity. Alex Bosworth has talked about this online all the time, is where my public key of my Lightning node represents my online self as I interact in this network and gamble online or purchase articles for less than a penny or whatever it is. And if I'm using a custodial wallet, as you can imagine, that node represents a million people. So you don't have this sense of identity online. And I think that people will soon realize as this stuff matures and things like Zap integrate with gaming solutions where your Zap wallet represents your gambling account or gaming account or whatever the case is. And a Blue Wallet user can't have that, right? They're going to still have to use their email, give their passport information to create an online identity. And with Bitcoin and with the Lightning Network, you don't need to do that. And so I think that is going to be a big thing. And that being your own node, being self-hosted, being non-custodial will represent an online identity where you are in control of your data. You are in control of your online self, and you don't have to dox yourself to participate in an online network of things. And so I think that will become more apparent soon. Right now, the only use case of Lightning is to like pay for something and tweet about it, and that's okay. And to Blue Wallet's credit, they allow people to do that seamlessly. But in the long run, I mean, the principles that got us here, some of the key features like online identity through public keys as opposed to my personal passport information, I think some of that stuff will start to rear its head as this stuff matures. So
how do you feel about something like tipping.me then?
Because
it feels like a bridge.
Yeah, I think that it, again, like, I don't think anyone's here to like be malicious. I think the tipping.me can be done in a non-custodial way, and it will. And the guy who built it has messaged me a few times, and we've gone back and forth. He seems like a great dude, and I'm very proud of what he's done. Because what's most important about tipping.me is the general education of like, wow, this Lightning thing's cool. Look what it could do. This is something that wasn't really possible before. The implementation of it, I mean, if you have a centralized service, technically you could have done that before. Like everyone Chase wires in money to an account and then you just tip and a database controls who has what money, right? I think general education and visually representing a lot of the fancy code that is going on behind the scenes is very important and paramount to getting people excited and creating the network effects of people wanting to donate to developers or contribute time themselves. But as far as actual implementation goes, I think that there's much better ways to build it. And I think he's aware of it, and we'll see that for sure.
All right. So the only other thing within Lightning that I've seen that I don't fully understand or haven't taken the time to look at, I mean, I kind of understand. But if people have said to me, oh, you know, open up a channel with me and we can transact. And I'm thinking to myself, what does that even mean? I don't know what that means. Do I have to go on and click and find you and open a channel? Or is it just the same as Bitcoin? We just have an address we send to.
Is not the, so opening a channel is establishing it's a multi-sig transaction with another peer. Now all of that though I think is and will be abstracted. So even tools like Autopilot within LND, where it's an agent that scans the network and the liquidity within it and then opens channels for you, opens channels, quote unquote, right. It onboards you onto this experience. So I don't think these are all, we're so early. So there's really, so in the whole Bitcoin space, like what altcoins are, in my opinion, is an arbitrage on the trend. What I mean by that is there's so much energy, passion, hope, and money that is interested in this new phenomenon, then there is general education and understanding of why it's important and what actually is creating value. And that is an arbitrage opportunity. One is way higher than the other. And by arbitrage means you can make money on the difference. Mm-hmm. And so what people do by that is make something called Ethereum or Pink Coin or whatever, and they pitch it to you and they know that you have the enthusiasm, the money, the energy to get behind it, but don't generally understand it. And we're seeing that gap narrow and narrow and narrow, and one day there will be no opportunity like that and a lot of these altcoins will go away. And it's the same type of thing on the Lightning Network, because people are so excited and so pumped, and things like channels and multi-sig and hopping and push payments and stuff like that are being touted and spouted, and you have to learn it. And I don't think that's the case, is people are more excited than there is development pace. And that will slowly come down and come down. And eventually, right, Lightning will be an experience that you have on like Cash App and Venmo, and it'll come with much cooler features and dynamics. But I think there's arbitrages on the trends generally within the whole industry.
Is there any attempt for standardization of, say, terminology within Lightning? Because the different experiences I've had with Lightning, there seems to be slightly different terminology to things. And I was a little bit confused. So my first experience on Blue Wallet with Lightning, I was just very confused with the whole moving money between two accounts. I just got very confused. And then I've looked at, obviously, Zap, and I've looked at Tipping.me. Is there anyone making any attempt to create some kind of standardization?
No. No, I don't think so. Well, there's certainly like the Bolt spec, that's the standard, the spec of the protocol. And of course, I think as a community, we should work towards standards. But I think a really cool characterization of Lightning is if you look at the Bitcoin network, nodes on the Bitcoin network have to come to consensus about every 10 minutes, right? And so that, why you don't want multiple implementations of a full node, is because if you get out of whack just one time, it's a catastrophe, right? It's a disaster. On Lightning, that's not the case. You can have different implementations of the protocol that have different design goals and aspirations and things that they want to achieve. And the same thing at the wallet level. I think in particular, like the difference between spendable wallet and saving wallet UIs on Lightning are just one balance. These are all just design challenges. And these are all people throwing things on the wall and seeing what sticks. And I wouldn't say that we need to come to a consensus of what we should all use. I think that the market will generally tell us. I mean, people will be like, that's really confusing and I'm not using your wallet because I don't know what the fuck is going on. And then people will stop designing it that way. And that's just, it goes to show how early we are, the fact that there's so many different ideas and UIs that it's generally unclear what works.
All right, cool. So let's talk about Zap.
Sure.
It's kind of cool that, are you doing it all on your own?
Yeah. So I now have funded, my family has funded, a few guys that seem to have been contributing a lot and very passionate about it. And I basically DM'd them like, hey, would you guys want to do this full time? Because Bitcoin's been amazing to my family. It's the best thing probably that's happened to my family, one of at least. And we're always looking to give back to the community and see ways that we can help. So one of those was, hey, we've created this thing that seems to have cultivated a lot of energy, a lot of aspiration, a lot of talented people. So let's give back and fund some of them. So there are two devs that we fund that seem to be really passionate about it and that they want to work on it more full time. But outside of that, I think Zap crossed 45 contributors at this point, and it's all just community driven, passion driven.
How do you coordinate that?
I don't.
How does it coordinate itself then?
We have a Slack and just GitHub, man. So everyone that's contributed to Zap, I actually haven't met. So the two biggest contributors, I've never met them in person. Yeah, I can scroll through the contributor list, and I've never shaken hands with pretty much anyone. So
how does the peer review and like approval and...
Yeah, so there are maintainers of the repository, so I'm one of them. And these are people that know the repository like the back of their hand. They know the goal, the immediate goals of what the project should be trying to do. And they are, same with Bitcoin Core, and they are in control of merging code in and out. But it's people submit pull requests. People come in. I think the cool thing about Zap is it isn't just like submit the equivalent of a BIP. Like Zap needs to have this functionality. But people come in as designers and say, have you thought about this way of expressing balance or something? Have you thought about this? So there's all sorts of proposals, and it all goes on in Slack and on GitHub. And yeah, it's very natural. You know, it's, to be honest, people would assume that, God, you get 45 people all over the world trying to make progress on a product. That's got to be hostile. That guy wants blue and that guy wants red. Now we're just in a pickle. But it's not the case, right? These people, I mean, Zap is very clear about its goals and its aspirations as a movement, not just a product, as something that represents a greater purpose. That's why people cultivate to it. And when you have a united vision, motivation that attracts a very particular person that it turns out happens to be a lot of, it's actually not complicated to make progress. We all kind of want to do the same thing, and it's a good feeling. But people intuitively are like, sheesh, man, do you guys like flip a coin? It's like, no, we all post our ideas, and it turns out, you know, that guy seems like he's right. That's a good one. And it's just that simple.
Is Zap a company?
So I incorporated because to pay people out and such, I don't want to have any personal liability.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But no, it doesn't operate for profit. There are certainly some interesting things. So coming from the background I have in markets and in finance, a characteristic of Lightning is it increases the velocity of the asset. It increases the efficient of settlement of a bearer instrument. That means the world to markets and how a commodity becomes efficient. And this is not particular to Bitcoin. This is generally speaking, if you look at the history of commodities or other assets, like inter-exchange linkage is one where, I mean, activity on an asset is going to migrate towards the most efficient way of settlement, the cheapest way of settlement, and velocity increasing on an asset is going to make markets efficient. It's going to make everything more efficient. So that, I think there's a huge opportunity there. And as a market person, as someone whose family has history in finance, I think that there may be some interesting stuff, and I'm always dabbling around trying to help Bitcoin the best way I can. But as it stands today, and forever, I want to speak in the now. I want to speak till I die. Zap and the wallets and products that you see, it will always be open source, it will always be free, and it will never compromise on its original principles.
Right, okay. Take me 5 years ahead, 10 years, where, whatever kind of time frame you want, where will that be? What's the goal?
I remember answering a question like this almost right after I launched Zap. And I like to think of Zap more as a movement. It's like it's a relatable thing that people cultivate to, because it represents like a better world. It has principles and a meaning and a reason to exist that people identify with, and they relate to, and they admire it, and they respect it. So I would hope in 10 years, whether Zap is still like the most popular Lightning wallet, or whether it means that it has established design principles in the Bitcoin industry and it's looked to figure out relationship that people have with the asset, or whatever it helps merchants, that Zap is more broadly these principles that represent like a greater Bitcoin and helping Bitcoin become more usable and a better asset. So I think that's not a very helpful answer, but in my opinion, I would hope that type of energy to exist in 10 years. I hope too, and I'm working to make sure that Zap is a great wallet in 10 years, that you can be using Bitcoin everywhere in your life, that it's helpful, and that Zap can help you accomplish that type of thing, accept it, even trade on top of Lightning. I think that would be great too. I think Zap is just here to help. And as long as we don't compromise on those principles, and we keep this energy and this vision of that Zap is here to make Bitcoin better, simply, that's it. That I would hope that that's still the case in 10 years.
Where do you feel we are in the kind of whole journey of Bitcoin?
I don't know. There's no like quantitative answer to that, because it would depend what the finish line is to you.
But there isn't a... actually, you know what? Finish line. Right? I thought about this, and it's arbitrary. But I guess... I guess when you get to the stage where people are using Bitcoin like Venmo, that regularly, like everyone's using it.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of cracked through like a Facebook or a Twitter or a Tinder, whichever sector you choose, it's cracked through, which to me it hasn't yet. And I don't think you can draw a line in the sand. I think you'll just get a feel.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I know guys that Bitcoin's at the finish line when it hits 50K and it makes them worth $500 million or whatever, right? Yeah. So there's different finish lines. But for that one in particular, hard to say, man. Hard to say. The reason it's hard to say is because it's impossible to draw a trajectory of development. Like the amount of people, so I got into Lightning, I think it was January of 2017, maybe, is when I started testing out code. And I think LND repository was started in 2016. So like fairly early. And it was a Slack group. It was me, Lalu, Stark, one LND contractor, like Alex Bosworth and Justin Camarena, and this anonymous Bitcoin user named Molly. And that was it. There was like nine of us. And if you were to tell me back then that today there would be thousands and tens of thousands of people downloading Zap, I would have called you a moron. I would have been disrespectful, like you were making fun of me. So it's really hard to paint a trajectory of how many people are going to be dedicated to solving this problem. But I think within the next decade, it's very safe to say that Bitcoin will be usable for a lot of these aspiration, ambitious things that we think so. And I think even fairly sooner than that. But that's me speculating that there's going to be a network effect of more devs, more money, more people, more Jack Dorsey's. I think so. So, yeah, that's my answer.
Right. I got a couple more questions for you. What are the most important things that you think need to happen with regards to Lightning, with regards to kind of development and the progression of the project? What do you think's important to come next?
I think it's really important that we have sound Light client so that pretty much any hardware that people use in their everyday lives can be a node, so that you don't have this custodial relationship with anything, and that every single piece of hardware, like your laptop, your phone, your desktop, are all online identities via public key, and that they are their own nodes. I think that would be very important. And it seems on the development roadmap, at least within LND, that's the number one priority as far as me tracking the repositories and watching Lalu code and stuff. And then I think more broadly, getting people in and out of the asset, Lightning has severe potential there. Like right now when I buy Bitcoin on Coinbase, it's delivered to me in like a week. And then for me to make a transaction.
A week?
Or whatever, 4 days, even 12 hours.
It's not instant.
No, not for me.
Why do you think that is? I thought it was instant purchases.
Is it?
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, not for me. Uh-huh. Or even on an exchange. Let's say, so exchange is instant, right? Well, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And but even getting that then to like a personal wallet and using it, I mean, waiting the 6 conf, waiting hours to be able to send between peers. I mean, the idea that I can get in and out of the asset in seconds, and I can transfer in seconds, that's powerful. And so someone or people need to be building that type of experience. So from a more product grander vision side of elevating Lightning to a place where it's more usable, people need to be getting in and out of this asset and using this settlement efficiency to our advantage. Actually, I mean, it's a very amazing thing that was accomplished and we need to take advantage of it. And then from a technical standpoint, having stable Light client node software where all everyday hardware can be a node and people don't have to be reliant on custodial services. I mean, those are the two probably.
All right, last question.
Sure.
Before we close out, if somebody's listened to this and they've not had any experience of Lightning yet, mm-hmm. and they're like, all right, Jack, I want to get involved, where would you advise them to start?
Like involved as in I just want to do the thing?
I just want to play with it. I want to, like I said to you, when I get my friends involved, I'm like, get yourself a hardware wallet, go on exchange and buy some Bitcoin and send it to the hardware wallet. That experience alone will be mind-blowing. So the next step, they're like, all right, I wanted to get involved in Lightning. What would you explain?
Yeah, well, so the equivalent of like buy yourself a hardware wallet, I think buy yourself a hardware node. So the Nodal project, in my opinion, you can buy this box. It's a full node. It's a Lightning node. I mean, to your friends at the pub or whatever, they don't need to know that. And they plug it in. It works, and then they click run Zap or run whatever, and it just launches. And it's like, wow, well, that's cool. And you buy an article for $0.006 US dollar, and you're like, whoa, you know, I couldn't have done that 10 years ago. I couldn't have done that 1 year ago. So that would be cool. So buying a Nodal, using Pierre Rochard's Node Launcher. I mean, if you want to experience it through something like Blue Wallet, I think that that's okay as long as you're fully aware of what you're doing. So that would be where I point them to. There's plenty of education out there too. It's a very inviting community. So
did you have the Trust Chain?
I did. I had the Trust Chain while I was on a plane. I received
yes,
it.
Yes, I knew that actually.
Yeah.
You were you first or Fluffy?
I was before Fluffy.
Right.
Yeah,
Rockstar Dev didn't
gave
he?
It to me. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. I think I was the first one to do it. I honestly, like, United should sponsor me. I mean, like, what better advertisement for United Wi-Fi than making micropayments while I'm, like, hovering over an ocean?
Did you see my Trust Chain yesterday?
No. What'd you
do? I was on a plane, and I sent it to another guy on a plane.
Plane to plane.
We went plane to plane.
P to P, plane
yeah,
to plane.
Plane to plane. Yeah.
That's awesome. Man.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, look, this was amazing. Tell everyone how to stay in touch, how they can follow Zap, who you want to hear from, who you don't want to hear from.
Well, I generally hang out on the internet pretty much my whole life. So I'm Jack Mallers on Twitter is just my name. If I'm not Jack Mallers, I'm Jimmy Mao, which was my Xbox gamer tag when I was a kid. And Slack, Twitter, the whole thing is where I hang out. So it's very easy to reach me. I don't hide. Mm-hmm. I look forward to talking to everyone. Thank you for having me on, man.
Mate, it's a
thank
pleasure. You for coming on. That was amazing. It's really good first one to get going with. So
I'm glad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so how was that? How cool is Jack? I've got to say, love that interview. Love spending some time with Jack. You've got to say, he's really, really impressive guy. The way he talked about the various design issues had me rethinking things. A great example of that is with regards to when I mentioned Coinbase. So despite what everyone thinks of Coinbase, I've always thought they've had really good design and UX, but do they? If you just want to buy Bitcoin, you find it easy because of the Coinbase design. That's good, right? But if you're on Coinbase and you end up buying some useless shitcoin because the Coinbase design leads you into it, is that good from a design perspective? It's probably good from the business side because, you know, they get their revenues from sales, but is that possibly poor for me as a user? Another thing with Jack which stuck with me is where he said he thinks about Bitcoin 100% of the time, and I've got so many gaps in my knowledge and I definitely need to be improving my knowledge, but then at the same time, is that too much friction for everyone else? So always loads of things I'm wrestling with. I'm always trying to think from the side of like an expert and be as, you know, experienced and knowledgeable as I can. But then I'm always trying to think from the perspective of somebody who comes new to this. You know, it's big and scary trying to get into Bitcoin. So yeah, a whole bunch of things I'm thinking about. But I really enjoyed the interview. Got to say a massive thanks to Jack for doing it. I really appreciate his time. I love what he's doing with his app. It's definitely interesting. I need to spend a bit more time on it. But yeah, big thanks to Jack. And also massive thanks to everyone who supports the show. Whatever you do. Doesn't matter if you're a sponsor or you just leave me a review on iTunes. But if you do anything to help the show, I hugely appreciate it. Actually, I just appreciate you listening to it. But if you want to do a bit more, if you want to support the show, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. I'm going to rattle through this as quickly as possible because I do it every week. But just listen to the ads it's useful. It's the sponsors who enable me to do this. So give them a chance. Have a listen to what they've got to say. If you don't want to listen to the ads, you can become a patron. I've got 91 now, closing down on 100, which is amazing. If you want to do that, head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid. For $5 a month, you can get the show without ads. You can get it early. If you don't want to be a patron, but you want to subscribe, I've got 10 subscribers who do it outside of Patreon. Just drop me an email. I'll send you a deposit address. You can send me some Bitcoin and I'll add you to the distribution list. I'm also accepting Lightning, so we can do that if you want. Actually, also, I've got merchandise now. I don't make any money from this. All of my profits are going to go towards buying people Lightning Nodes. But if you're interested in getting some of my merch, head over to my website. There's a section for that. You can also become a show sponsor. Downloads go up and up every month. It's getting a little bit crazy. So last month, I think it was just over 220,000, which blows my mind. The fact that I'm nearly a quarter of a million for a whole month is really, really amazing. So thank you to everyone who helps towards that. But if you want to become a sponsor, email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. We can talk about that. You can leave me a review on iTunes or you can click on the subscribe button. Both help with my ranking. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Medium. I'm at What Bitcoin Did on everything. My personal Twitter is at Peter McCormack. DMs are open. You can check out my website, which is whatbitcoindid.com. You can sign up to my newsletter there, or you can share the show out with your friends and family. Thank you so much for putting up with this every week. I know it must be annoying. Anyway, thank you for all the support. Loads of interesting interviews coming up this month on Lightning. But if you've got any feedback, do reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.